ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 12, Text 25. Ke kani vayo nishvasan prana apana etc. Tejasu. Okay, that's in parenthesis. So, Tejasu usmanam atmavan. Apsu asrik shileshma puyani shito shesham. Yatha udbhavam. Ke kani vayo nishvasams. Teja sushmanam atmavan. Apsvrsrik shleshma puyani. Let's do it again. Apsvrsrik shleshma puyani. Chito ksesham yato bhavam. Kekani vayu nishvasams. Tejas sushmanam atmavam. Apsvasrik shleshma puyani. Shito shesham yato bhavam. Kekani vayu nishvasams. Teja sushmanam atmavan. Apsvasrik shleshma puyani. Chito shesham yato bhavan. Let's chant. Ladies, please. Anyone else? Anyone else? Sorry. K. In the sky. Kani. All the holes of the body. Vayo. In the air. Nishvasan. All the different airs moving within the body, such as prana, apana, etc. Tejasu, in fire. Ushmanam, the heat of the body. Atmavan, a person who knows the self. Apsu, in water. Asrik, blood. Shleshma, mucus. Puyani, and urine. Shito, in the earth. Shesham, the remaining, namely skin, bones, and the other hard things in the body, namely skin, bones, and the other hard things in the body. Yata, udbhavam, wherefrom all them grew. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada ki. A sober, self-realized person who has full knowledge should merge the various parts of the body in their original sources. The holes in the body are caused by the sky. The process of breathing is caused by the air. The heat of the body is caused by fire. And semen, blood, and mucus are caused by water. The hard substances like skin, muscle, and bone are caused by the earth. In this way, all the constituents of the body are caused, all the constituents of the body are caused by various elements, and they should be merged again into those elements. Purport. To be self-realized, one must understand the original sources of the various elements of the body. The body is a combination of skin, bone, muscle, blood, semen, urine, stool, heat, breath, and so on, which all come from earth, water, fire, air, and sky. One must be well conversant with the sources of all the bodily constituents. Then one becomes a self-realized person, or Atmavan, one who knows the self. Kekani vayu nishvasams tejasushmanam atmavan apsvasrik shleshma puyani chitoshesham yathobhavan. A sober, self-realized person who has full knowledge should merge the various parts of the body in their original sources. The holes in the body are caused by the sky. The process of breathing is caused by the air. The heat of the body is caused by fire. And semen, blood, and mucus are caused by water. The hard substances, like skin, muscle, and bone, are caused by earth. In this way, all the constituents of the body are caused by various elements, and they should be merged again into those elements. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmiritam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. So what is being talked about here is how the living entity who has identified himself or herself with his or her body can slowly but surely become detached by merging the different parts of the body into the respective elements whence they came. Now, this appears to be very much a yogic process. When I say yogic, I don't mean bhakti yogic. I mean more in the realm of Ashtanga yoga or Hatha yoga. It is a process. It is a mechanical process. And this, and as we can see, if we go back a few pages, Srila Prabhupada has given very little purport, hardly any purport on this, because it obviously either pertains to an other age, and or it pertains to another system of yoga than the bhakti yoga system, which is given throughout the Bhagavatam as to how one can become detached from the material body. The subject matter here is we're talking about the vanaprastha, the vanashram system, and here we're talking in particular about the vanaprastha ashram, which is the ashram that one enters after he has finished his household activity. It is in between brahmachari, and it is in after the household or grahastha ashram comes the vanaprastha system, and it is a gradual detaching of oneself from one's family life. The purpose of this, of course, is ultimately to come to the process or the consciousness of sannyas. And in the consciousness of sannyas, at least the way it's supposed to operate, is one becomes completely detached from his own physical body, his material body, and all of the connections or relationships that he has developed through the course of his life or her life with his physical body. It all starts out, as I said, with the physical body, with the material body, and the soul identifies itself with this material body. It begins to think that this material body is me, this is me, and as it grows up, it begins to think and believe and feel that all persons, places, and things that are intimately and closely connected with the material body are also an extension of that me. For example, I have a mother, I have a father, and they feed me, they clothe me, they shelter me, they smile at me, they hug me, they educate me. So I feel very close to them, and I feel they are an extension of my body. So if I hear somebody insult them, or if I hear that one or both of them become ill, I may grieve, because in effect I feel that I myself am being either insulted, or I myself am being disordered. The more that a person is identifying himself with his body, the more a person is connecting himself with his associates or companions. It's not only the mother and father and brothers and sisters, but it's uncles and aunts and grandfathers, and it's also close friends. So any one of these persons who are in some way afflicted or affected or disturbed, we feel disturbed because they are extensions of our own body. Such as when our bodies become afflicted, our bodies become disturbed, our bodies become rattled or shaken, we feel some disturbance. So if your body has become an extension in my mind of my body, then I will, by sympathy and empathy means feeling what you're feeling, I will then begin to feel similar types of distress, even though I really have nothing to be distressed about. Actually, nothing is happening to my body. It's happening to your body, or it's happening to his body or her body, but it's not happening to mine. But because of false identification, I am now entangled with all these bodies. Not only are we entangled with different bodies, but we are entangled with different places. For example, Los Angeles is where my body lives, where my body sits. And so Los Angeles then becomes very important to me because it's in Los Angeles, for example, that I work, I get my paycheck, I get my food, I get the things that help to sustain and develop and enable my body to function. So Los Angeles becomes an extension of my body. As long as I'm getting paid in Los Angeles, I have a job in Los Angeles, I'm doing something in Los Angeles, then Los Angeles becomes important to me, more so than New York or Denver, Colorado, or San Francisco, because I don't get a paycheck in those cities. I don't get my food there. I don't get my clothes there. So I have no reason to really identify with them. They're not extensions of the body because no connection is being created with those cities. Or even, let us say, go beyond cities, you say California. So this is many people, they identify themselves with this particular state. This is my state. I live in California. And one becomes proud of the fact that he lives in California. Yes, I'm a Californian. I'm a Los Angelinos. And they root for the teams, the baseball teams, like the Brooklyn that's long ago and far away. But the Los Angeles Dodgers, different teams that the San Francisco 49ers and the Denver Broncos, and that they identify with those teams as extensions of their own body. Because they are the teams of that state, they are the teams of that city. And therefore, they feel that if that team wins, then I win. Because they're an extension of my body, and I am the body. Or if the team loses, then I feel I lose. And what happens is that I feel grievous, I feel disturbed, I feel upset, and I don't even want to talk to anybody because I feel like I've been crushed. Yes, I've been my team has been defeated by 30 or 40 points. It's a horrible routing, and it's a day that I should just take off from work and not even concern myself with anything else but just grieving for the loss of that game. Is this all clear to everyone? The principle is that So we identify with our bodies, and from our bodies, as I said, we identify with cities, we identify with states, we identify with a country, we even identify with this planet. There was once a program, The War of the Worlds, it was called. It was a radio program going way back. It was written by H.G. Wells, a very well-known writer. It was a science fiction writer. And it was produced by Orson Welles, a very, very substantial actor. And it was all about how the Martians attacked this world. And he reported it as if it were you are there type of experience. He was narrating it, and now the Martians have just landed, and I see them getting out, and they've got these big heads and pointy chins, and he starts describing them, and then they've got these weapons with fires flaring out of them, and people began to think that this is really happening. And they began calling up the radio station. Is this really happening? Of course, the phone was going off the hook, and people were... Halfway through the broadcast, all of America was in complete tremors. And by the end of the program, it was like everybody was, nobody was even listening to the program. They had their heads out the window looking for the Martians, ready to attack. It was done so well and so with so much realism, you know, with the sound effects and all of the kind of things that go into that. So everybody in the world who is, for example, hostile. For example, you're in one country and I'm another country and we're against one another. Or friends, people who are enemies, people, brothers and sisters who hadn't spoken to each other for years. Everybody became a friend on this planet because we're all in this together. We're all being attacked by the Martians. So we identify ourselves also with our particular planet as well, depending upon, you know, the time, place, and circumstances. Otherwise, things go on as usual. People make friends. People make enemies. They come together. They stay for a certain amount of time. And then those friendships, just like seaweed in the ocean, they come together, get a little entangled. Then the seaweed separates, and by the current, it's brought this way or it's brought that way. So, therefore, this identification is truly a killer. It's a killer because it fills us with fear. It fills us with anxiety. It fills us with doubt. It fills us with uncertainty. We become so upset when anything will affect our bodies or our senses. But as the Bhagavad Gita says, an intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery which are due to contact with the material senses. Such pleasures of the senses have a beginning and an end, and the wise person, he does not delight in them. What does the wise person delight in? He delights in permanent pleasure, a pleasure that not only doesn't end, but is ever increasing. And because it is ever increasing, the delight becomes greater and greater. And that this we refer to as inner pleasure. A liberated person is not attracted to material sense pleasure, but is always in trance, enjoying the pleasure within. In this way, the self-realized person enjoys unlimited happiness, for he focuses or concentrates on the Supreme Lord. So unlimited happiness comes from focusing on the Supreme Lord in any one of the 9 different forms of devotional service. And Srila Prabhupada has come and he has taught us about those different forms of devotional service, such as hearing about the Lord, chanting about the Lord, remembering Krishna, especially his pastimes, and remembering them in an appreciative and loving way, so that they are cherishable and relishable. Serving the lotus feet of the Lord, those of you who have deities, you know, you wash the feet or you touch the feet, take the dust of the feet. So serving the lotus feet of the Lord, worshiping the Lord, just as is going on right now on the altar. You fan the Lord, you offer water to the Lord, you offer food substances to the Lord, offer water to the Lord. So all of these actions which are done with love and devotion, which are done with the heart, which are done with the feeling of full appreciation that we truly owe them to Krishna, that we are beholden to Krishna, for Krishna is doing so very much for us. So there's worshiping of the Lord and also offering prayers to the Lord. There are prayers which we know are established prayers, which we find in the Bhagavad Gita, which we find in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then there are prayers of the heart in which one has some personal problems and one expresses them to the Lord and begs for the mercy that those problems may become resolved, so that the difficulties and the tribulations and the trials and pressures and stresses may go away and one's mind may become pacified or calm or tranquil, so that what? It can focus, it can concentrate, as the verse I just quoted a few moments ago goes, it can concentrate on the Supreme Lord. So there is, as I said, hearing, chanting, remembering, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, worshiping the Lord, offering prayers to the Lord, and a practical service to the Lord. Some of us are cooking for the Lord. Some of us are doing book distribution for the Lord. Some of us may be doing a certain messenger type of work for the Lord. Some of us may be doing certain types of preaching for Krishna. All these is practical service. You use your body. You use your body to go to the airport or to the bus station or get in your car. you go, for example, to, as I was up in San Francisco with the Ratha Yatra, so I used the body, I set up a table, I put all my CDs on the table, my books on the table, and I stay there for 6-7 hours, and I talk to people. So that's utilizing the body for practical service. You talk to people, you make friends with people, you sell some things, sometimes you don't sell anything. But it's all very friendly and it's all very fulfilling because the only object is to share Krishna with whomever comes, in this case, to the table. So it's all basically preaching. That's everyone here has an opportunity in one way or another, or gets an opportunity to serve Krishna in a practical way. Then there is another way called a friendly association with the Lord, feeling that the Lord is your best friend. I don't mean having the rasa that is referred to in our nectar of devotion, nectar of instruction, the rasa of Krishna being my friend as he is to Arjuna, as he is to Subala and Stoka Krishna. That's a different thing. It's the devotee who is still in the rasa of awe and reverence and servitorship, but he feels that God is his best friend. Why does he feel that? Because Krishna is, in a sense, serving him. How is he serving him? He's feeding him. He's clothing him. He's sheltering him. He's giving him guidance. He's educating him with these wonderful books. He's giving him association of other devotees. He's giving him so many things. The bright sunshine is there. The air is there, somewhat clean, at least clean enough to stay alive for one day or one day more. But he's breathing the air which is there. The earth is still there. It's not blowing up here anyway. And so the earth is producing fruits and trees and vegetables and roots and nuts and all of these things. So Krishna is a provider. We refer to Krishna in that form as providence. He's providing for us. Therefore, is there any reason we should not feel obliged to Krishna? And at times, due to karmic reactions which we have set in motion in our past, he may withdraw those very blessings. He can. Right now, as I speak, there are people who will not eat today, people who may not sleep today, people who have no house today. They sleep on the street. Their situation is highly deplorable and lamentable. So we who have a place to sleep, and if the rain comes down, you have a covering over our heads. We have a covering. If it gets cold, we have some warm clothing that we can wear. So Krishna is providing all of this. We should not think, of course, that just because I'm doing some service, I'm doing a job, therefore Krishna owes it to me. He doesn't have to. We may have committed so many offenses in the past that actually he owes nothing. What he owes us is quite a number of slaps in the face and kicks in the butt and a few other things to go along with that. So that's what he owes us, but because he's merciful, because he's kind, he's sweet, he's loving, he's generous, he can forgive and forget, and that's exactly what he does. He said, these persons, they're trying to serve me and they want to know me. They want to love me, and they're glorifying me, they're honoring me, they're praising me, they're applauding me, they're reading, sorry, they are reading books about me, so I will cancel their karmic reactions, I will do away with them, so that they will have an environment. They will have a body, they will have a mind, they will have emotions, and they will have an intelligence that they can use for the furtherance of their spiritual advancement. This is Krishna. Sometimes a devotee who has done some wrong things in the past receives this mercy and he feels, wow, Krishna is so very kind. He's so very sweet. I owe him so very much. But then he may get a position in this particular institution or any institution. And he may be applauded by it. He may be praised by it, glorified, honored by it. And begin to think, in effect, that he's important. He's wonderful, glorious, great, significant. Thinking like this, he begins to come to the unfortunate and erroneous conclusion that he's better than others, he's higher than others, superior to others, and he begins to identify himself as a better, as a greater, as a bigger than other persons. And the result of that is that he puts himself or herself out of sorts, out of harmony with them, and they sense and they feel his smugness. They feel and sense his contemptuousness. And the result is that they respond accordingly, not very favorably. And quite often, people of such sorts, they get into spats. Anger arises. And from anger, you get some hatred. You get vengeance. And you can't even think about Krishna. You can't think about God because you're thinking about, is he going to get back at me? Am I going to get back at that person? What's the result going to be? So that's why it's mentioned in these verses that we need to learn the art of detaching ourselves. And I have just mentioned the 9 forms of devotional service which assist or aid and abet us in detaching ourselves from our material body. Now Krishna says right at the outset of the Bhagavad Gita, there was a verse which is right in the tip of my head, but it's... Anyway, I'll paraphrase. Krishna says that you're not your physical body. You're not your mind. You're not your intelligence. He says that you are the soul within, which exists within the heart area. That's who you really are. And it's this soul which is part and parcel of the Supreme Soul. The living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the 6 senses, which includes the mind. For the soul, there is neither birth nor death at any time. It has not come into being. It does not come into being. It will not come into being. It is unborn, eternal, ever-existing, and primeval. It is not slain when the body is slain. And what is its size? The Bhagavatam tells us that the size of the soul is 1/10,000th of the part of a tip of a hair. Tiny, subatomic. And yet it is radiating energy. It's very much like the sun. The sun radiates sunshine. Similarly, the soul is radiating the sunshine of the energy that it gets from the super soul that exists right directly beside it. So the soul gets its energy from the super soul, and that energy goes into the blood and then is transported throughout the body. That which pervades the entire body you should know to be indestructible. No one is able to slay the imperishable soul. As a person puts on new garments, giving up old ones, the soul similarly puts on new bodies, giving up old and useless ones. So the soul is also the living entity in this material world carries his different conceptions of life from one body to the next. As the air carries aromas, thus he takes one kind of body and again quits it to take another body. Just like the air is carrying the different aromas from one place to another, similarly the soul is being transported by material nature from one place to another, going here, going there, And in each body that it gets, it's receiving its share of bad karma or good karma, or which is generally gives us pleasure, pain, or a mixture of both. So it becomes incumbent upon us to want to disidentify ourselves with our material physical body. Because as long as we are identifying ourselves with this body, as I mentioned at the very outset of today's talk, we are connecting ourselves, entangling ourselves, strangling ourselves with these different connections. We form relationships with persons, and sometimes the other person may not be very moral, may not be very ethical, may not know etiquette, and we become, if we're attached to our bodies, we become upset, we become disturbed, we become shaken and rattled and distressed when anything goes wrong for the body, because the body's purpose is to give us sense pleasure. But when one begins to develop soul pleasure, that comes from serving the Supreme Lord. As I mentioned in the verse a few moments back, that one begins to get inner pleasure when one serves the Supreme Lord with all his heart, his soul, and his mind, and his strength. So when he serves the Supreme Soul with love in his heart, asking nothing in return, except just to continue to be able to serve Krishna, serve God with all his heart and soul and mind and strength, then the Lord provides us with this particular opportunity. He makes arrangements. And through the course of arrangements, we become purer and purer. Now, what does it mean to become purer and purer? It means to become more detached from the body. The soul knows it is the soul. It knows it's eternal. It knows it's it knows it's invisible. It knows that it's not slain when the body is slain. As it's mentioned, the soul cannot be killed by any weapon. It can't be burned by fire. It can't be moistened by water. And it cannot be withered by the wind. It is eternal. That's who we are, eternal. So when a person, as a result of his service, his love, his dedication, his devotion, his appreciation, his submission, his surrender to Krishna, Krishna bestows his mercy upon him. And he feels that the soul feels the mercy within itself. And it goes from there, it goes to the mind, it goes to the body, and one feels happiness within the mind, happiness within the body. And so even if he may have some little ailment, this joy, this peace, this strength, this happiness, it transcends all things of the body. It transcends the mind, transcends the intelligence. One simply feels his connection with eternality and feels a sense and feeling of love for everyone and everything, because he knows he is a soul, he knows he is connected with the Supreme Soul, and being connected with the Supreme Soul, since all souls are connected with the Supreme Soul, he can then connect himself in consciousness with all other souls. The humble soul, by virtue of true knowledge, sees with equal vision a learned and gentle Brahman, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater. He feels his connection with all of them. He doesn't hate them. He doesn't look down upon them. He doesn't have any contempt for them. He loves all of them because he sees them as reflections or manifestations of the Supreme Lord in a minute form. So, therefore, as mentioned before, the more we become detached, the more we become detached from these false identifications, the more we become slowly but surely attached to the pleasure, to the Supreme Lord, and in the process of offering, giving pleasure to the Supreme Lord. That is our only business. We lose interest in our own pleasure. Now, why? The embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, though the taste for sense objects remains. But ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, a higher pleasure, higher joy, divine bliss, one becomes fixed in Krishna consciousness. When one is fixed in Krishna consciousness, He desires nothing except to give, to offer, to surrender more of himself to the Supreme Lord with the firm intention of giving more and more pleasure to the Supreme Lord. This was the attitude of the gopis of Vrindavan. They loved Krishna for himself. They looked pretty. They looked beautiful. They did it for Krishna. They were not concerned about Krishna praising them or saying nice things about them. Their only concern was when Krishna would look at them, he would feel pleasure and they would feel pleasure as a result. They would serve him in so many ways. Some would play music and some would massage his feet. And some would present nice cook preparations. Everyone served Krishna with the idea of pleasing him, of increasing his pleasure. He's always blissful. He doesn't need anyone to help him feel blissful. But his bliss, like an ocean wave, can go from 5 feet to 10 feet to 50 feet, 100 feet high waves, hurricane style. So this is what the gopis of Vrindavan did to Krishna. Literally, they gave him a hurricane bliss, where the waves of bliss got higher and higher, and he felt such obligation to them that he said to them, I can never repay you, never, never in millions of lives can I repay you, so just be satisfied with your devotional service, and all I can give you really is just myself, which implies that he gave them infinite bliss. And when he had to leave Vrindavan, they were still blissful, but in separation rather than in connection or in meeting. So I'll conclude here. Are there any questions or any comments that any of you would like to make on these particular points as to why we must become detached from matter and attached to spirit? You have a question? Yeah, well, the whole point revolves around one point, and that is, are you being possessive of that person? When you're possessive, then you make demands upon the person. Then you expect things from that person, beyond even possibly the requirements of the duty. That person has certain, let's just say, responsibilities to you, but you are expecting not only that, but you may be expecting even more, or maybe they're not doing it as nicely as you would like. This is all part of the possession and domination, mentality. So we need to be free of the mental idea that I am a controller. We are actually controlled by Krishna. And our business, yes, is to do duties. And if we continue to remember that I'm serving my family, I'm doing it for Krishna. That's who I do everything on behalf of him and for the sake of him. So Krishna will give you guidance on how much and how little to do when your consciousness is correct, when you are doing it as a love offering for Krishna consciously. You see, he will give you inner guidance. You don't speculate this. When you are in touch with Krishna as a result of remembering Krishna, then you are receiving the flow of his mercy. And when you receive the flow of his mercy, you know exactly what you have to do with full conviction. So that's the way that works. So therefore, we need to be less controlling, less possessing, less domineering, and we have to back off a little bit and say, well, wait a minute, I'm simply a servant of Krishna, and that's it. Now, Lord, you tell me what to do. You guide me how much I should do, how little I should do. And then he also gives you the detachment after you've done what you're supposed to do, and you don't run through a guilt trip, I should have done more, I should have done this, as one does when one is on the mental platform. We all have been through that trip, I'm sure. Yes. Thank you for listening. A little louder, Prabhu. I'm getting too old to hear. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, what you're doing is quite right. You can also pray for the billions of people. There's no harm in that. Pray that they all become God conscious and that you've been given the opportunity and the potency to be make them. But we do also have some special relationships with our mothers and our fathers and some of the persons who have done some nice things for us in the course of our lives. There are certain, you might say, obligations, although in Krishna consciousness, you're actually free of those obligations when you're just serving Krishna. But because you know they don't fully understand your position, where you're coming from, you need to sympathize with their mentality, which is to be attached to you. You may be somewhat detached from them, but they don't understand that. So, in fact, if you act detached and your mother calls you and you don't return the call, we have these problems, especially in the 70s and 80s. You don't return the calls, or she sends you a birthday gift and you don't even thank her. This is actually very crude and very savage. You don't have to, technically speaking, but the very fact is, if you want to help her to become sympathetic, not just to you as a person, but to the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, to the practices of Krishna consciousness, and to helping her possibly to become a devotee of Krishna consciousness, that you better darn well at least send her a greeting, call, phone her up, and express your appreciation. Now, her sending you the gift or calling you is her expression of love on a limited basis. This is God showing love to you. Okay? It's coming from him. All love comes from Krishna. He's the source. So she's expressing her love from a maternal point of view to you. So we don't have to, because we're detached, ignore, disregard, look down upon. We don't have to do that. We can show appreciation. Showing appreciation is also Krishna's love. And it doesn't mean that you become attached when you show appreciation. It simply means that you are sensitive enough to recognize and acknowledge that person's love. And that's a good thing. That's a normal thing. It's a healthy thing. But don't let it go beyond that. I had this relationship with my mother for many, many years. She became a devotee. She was chanting regularly. She prayed to Krishna regularly. She had her beads. And she had her own little altar, her own little deities, and all these things. And I maintained a very friendly, very loving, warm relationship with her. And I didn't feel any problem. However, when I was in the yoga system long before that, I didn't even call her. I called her by her last name, Mrs. her last name. This was horrible. It was eating her up. It was driving her crazy. My father was writing me letters saying, the least you could do is just, you know, thank your mother for the gift that she sent you. Or are you so removed? Are you so detached? It was a horrible situation. And I regret those days, and I was misguided by my previous spiritual master, really, in that situation. I just thought I should just be detached and not have anything to do with them. You can be detached and still be a human being, still be loving, still be kind, still be sweet, still be affectionate without being entangled with them. Because you do it all on behalf of Krishna. You do it for the sake of Krishna. You do it out of love for Krishna. And that way you're detached, even though you're expressing love to your relatives and your friends and your uncles and aunts and so forth. Does that answer your question? Okay. Yeah. Anyone else? It's getting a little late, so. But I'll end the class now. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada ki. Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Hare Krishna. some reason or other, I don't think they had that much devotion as he does. I met your sister. She even bought him 3 of my discs. Yeah. Did she care? Did she call you?
No, but I think that's it.
Oh, yeah. She came to all the different programs.